It worked yesterday.
Good afternoon. We are reconvening our council meeting from February 19th. It is February 20th at 2 p.m. Councilors, this is a land use meeting. Keelan, could you please call the roll?
Avalos.
Present.
Dunphy.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
Null.
Here.
Ryan. Koyama Lane.
Here.
Murillo.
Here.
Novick.
Here.
Clark.
Here.
Green.
Here.
Zimmerman. Hurdle Guinea.
Here. Thank you. And could we have our attorney read our rules and rules of decorum, please?
Yes, I'm going to read the rules of decorum and then I will. Oh, I'm going to read the rules of decorum and then I'll also run through the specifics for the land use.
Thank you.
Okay. So welcome to the Portland City Council. To testify before council in person or virtually, you must sign up in advance on the council agenda at Do you want to call the item? www.portland.gov/council/agenda. Information on engaging with the council can be found on the council clerk's webpage. Individuals may testify for 3 minutes unless the presiding officer states otherwise. Your microphone will be muted when your time is over. The presiding officer preserves order. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If you cause a disruption, a warning will be given. Further disruption will result in the ejection from the meeting. Anyone who fails to leave once ejected is subject to arrest for trespass. Additionally, council may take a short recess and reconvene virtually. Your testimony should address the matter being considered. When testifying, state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. If you are a lobbyist, identify your organization you represent, and virtual testifiers should unmute themselves when the council clerk calls your name. Okay. Council Clerk, do you want to read the item and then I can go into the rest of the...
Thank you, Keelan.
Yeah, thank you. Item 8, amend the comprehensive plan map and zoning map for properties at 3508 Northeast 11th Avenue and 1123 Northeast Fremont Street at the request of Derek Metzen, Green Box Architecture, LU24-073674CPZC.
Okay.
Thank you.
Me again. This is an evidentiary hearing. This means that you may submit new evidence to council in the support of your arguments. For council consideration on a comprehensive plan zone map change, testimony will be heard as follows. We will begin with a staff report by PP&D staff for approximately 10 minutes. And following the staff report, the city council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The applicant will go first and will have 10 minutes to address the council. After the applicant, the council will hear from individuals or organizations that support the applicant's proposal. Each person will have 3 minutes to testify. Next, the council will hear from persons or organizations who oppose the applicant's proposal. Again, each person will have 3 minutes to testify. If there was any testimony in opposition to the applicant's proposal, the applicant will have an additional 5 minutes to rebut the testimony given in opposition to the proposal. The council may then close the hearing and deliberate. As this is a non-emergency ordinance, it will pass to second reading. Council may make amendments to the ordinance and findings and direct staff to return with revised findings and amendments. Scope of testimony for evidentiary hearings. I'd like to announce several guidelines for those who will be addressing the City Council today. Any letters or documents you wish to become a part of the record should be given to the council clerk after you testify. Similarly, the original or a copy of any slides, photographs, drawings, maps, videos, or other items you show to the council during your testimony, including PowerPoint presentations, should be given to the council clerk to make sure they become part of the record. Testimony must be addressed to the approval criteria. Any testimony or arguments, evidence you present must be directed toward the applicable approval criteria for this land use review or other criteria in the city's comprehensive plan or zoning code you believe will apply to the decision. PP&D staff will identify the applicable approval criteria as a part of their staff report to the council. Issues must be raised with specificity. You must raise an issue clearly enough to give the council and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue. If you do not, you will be precluded from appealing to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. Applicants must identify constitutional challenges to conditions of approval. If the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow the council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court. Thank you. I'll now turn back to the Council President to address conflicts of interest and ex parte contacts.
Thank you. And councilors, before we ask about conflicts of interest, I do just want to give a little bit of information on what we're doing today. This is a hearing about an amendment to the comprehensive plan map. And what that means is that this is an item that has been reviewed by our planners and then reviewed by the folks above them within the Bureau before it comes to us. We receive these items whether or not the recommendation from staff is to approve or to not approve. It's not an appeal to us. It is just the next step in the process and then comes with a staff recommendation. So it's a little bit different from what we did the last time we did a land use hearing. But as with other land use hearings, the first thing we need to do is see if any councilors have any conflicts of interest. Seeing no conflicts of interest, do any members of council have any council members of council had ex parte contact to declare or information that you have gathered outside of this hearing to disclose? Fantastic. There are no conflicts and no ex parte contacts have been had. I will call for testimony now. We will begin with the staff report. And it looks like we have our staff up here. Could you please introduce yourselves and go ahead and go over the information for us?
Yes, good afternoon, Council. Thank you all for having us today. My name is David Kuhnhausen. I'm the Interim Director of Portland Permitting and Development. I'm here purely to support staff. Amanda Rhodes, the planner assigned to this case, is a subject matter expert and is going to be leading the presentation today. I will then kick it off to her to walk through this case with you all.
Great. Good afternoon, Madam President and members of the Council. My name is Amanda Rhodes, and I'm the staff planner for this case from Portland Permitting and Development. And again, this hearing is for a comprehensive plan map amendment with a concurrent zoning map amendment for a property at Northeast Fremont Street and Northeast 11th. The proposal, if approved, would be changing two maps, the comprehensive plan map and the zoning map. The comprehensive plan map represents what we expect to happen in the 20-year time horizon, and the zoning map reflects what can be developed today. There's a relationship between the two maps. Sometimes some comprehensive plan map designations have more than one corresponding zone, and sometimes the zoning on a site is not in compliance with its comp plan designation. In this case, the zoning map is compliant with the current comprehensive plan map designation. The current zoning is R5 or residential 5000 with the residential 5000 comprehensive plan map designation. And if approved, the proposal would apply the CM1 or commercial mixed use 1 base zone and the mixed use dispersed comprehensive plan map designation on this corner property. And a few things to point out about this land use review type, which is different from other type 3 reviews. Again, this hearing is not for an appeal of a land use decision. Land use reviews that include a comprehensive plan map amendment first have a hearing with the hearings officer, who makes a recommendation to council, and then the final local decision is made by city council. I'm here today representing the hearings officer's recommendation. This case type is not subject to the same statutory time limits as other land use cases. We don't need to issue our final local decision within 120 days. And finally, this review is only about the map changes. No development is proposed at this time. If these changes are approved, any future development would be subject to the development standards of the new base zone. Now I'll share a few images of the site and its vicinity. The site is 5,850 square feet. It's a residential site shown on the left with a red dot. It's within a single dwelling residential area of Northeast Portland. It's located on Northeast Fremont Street, several blocks east of Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Irving Park is to the southwest of the site, directly south across Fremont is the Irvington Historic District, which is also primarily zoned single dwelling residential, and a small commercial area is located to the east of the site on Fremont at 15th Avenue. The existing building shown in the photo on the right was originally a commercial structure. It was expanded and converted in 1986 to a residential unit, and the western portion of the site is currently vacant. There had been a house there which was demolished in 1991. Some more photos. I'll be going clockwise, starting in the upper left, and you'll see the arrow pointing to the site. Here we see the neighboring house to the east in the foreground. On the upper right, again, that arrow is pointing at the site, and then you'll see the existing house to the north. The picture on the lower right shows the houses across Fremont. Those houses are within the Irvington Historic District. A few more, again, starting in the upper left, there's a view of a few houses along Northeast 11th Avenue. You're looking in the second one at Irving Park to the southwest from kind of the corner of the site. And then you see some storefronts from the CM1 area, several blocks to the east. If this request is approved, the map changes will result in an increase in development potential. The numbers here don't reflect opportunities for bonuses for the two base zones, but in short, the CM1 zone will allow a small increase in height from 30 to 35 feet and larger increases in floor area and building coverage. And the CM1 zone will allow more of a wider range of uses, including commercial uses, to take place on the site. Now I'll summarize the two relevant sets of approval criteria for the review. The approval criteria for the comprehensive plan map amendment focus on looking at the proposal against the relevant goals and policies of the comp plan and determining whether, on balance, the proposed designation is equally or more supportive of the comprehensive plan than the existing designation. So when we're doing this, we don't weigh every single goal or policy. We don't weigh them all equally. In this case, for example, we ignored policies on industrial development or employment districts. We were paying closer attention to housing policies, public facilities, urban form, design, and development. Just like that. The comp plan also refers us to a number of other plans that have to be shown to be consistent with the proposal as well. So we're looking at the statewide land use planning goals, the metro urban growth management functional plan, and the adopted area plans, in this case, the Albina community plan and the Sabin neighborhood plan. Through these plans, we're looking at a similar set of issues, but we're getting, you know, more and more focused on the geographic area. To address these criteria, the applicant provided a detailed narrative responding to each of the relevant goals and policies of these plans, and these were reviewed by city staff and the hearings officer. The zoning map amendment criteria ensure that the proposed zoning designation is the most appropriate of those corresponding zones and that public services are adequate to serve the proposal. For criterion A, the applicant submitted a detailed narrative and additional exhibits addressing why CM1 is the most appropriate of the two zones. And to respond to criterion B, the applicant provided a transportation impact study, a stormwater report, and a geotechnical report. These documents similarly were reviewed by city staff and the hearings officer. The Sabin Community Association Land Use and Transportation Committee did submit a letter of support stating that the changes will enable, quote, low impact, small scale development that provides services for nearby residences and is compatible with the surrounding area. One neighbor did attend the hearings officer hearing and asked questions about height limits, but no other public comment was received. The hearings officer's findings conclude that all applicable criteria have been met based on several key points. The proposal was found on balance to equally meet the relevant comprehensive plan goals and policies. The proposal maintains or increases development potential of a site which is within the urban growth boundary. It's within the inner ring area of central Portland, and it's located close to several bus lines. The proposal enables development of small scale commercial uses, which is seen as positive at this location. The proposed zone, CM1, was found to be the most appropriate due to its location on Fremont, its close proximity to another CM1 zoned area, and its proximity to civic resources like Irving Park and nearby churches. And the proposal would adequately be served by current city infrastructure. With those findings, the hearings officer recommended approval of both map amendments with no conditions. Council has four alternatives in this case today. You can tentatively approve the application and direct the applicant and staff to return to amend the ordinance to include the final decision and findings. You can tentatively approve the application with conditions of approval and direct the applicant and staff to return to amend the ordinance. You can delay the decision to a future date and request alternatives be explored, excuse me, or you can tentatively deny the application and then direct staff to return to amend the ordinance. And that concludes my staff presentation. I'm happy to handle any questions if you have any.
Are there any technical questions, counsel, before we hear from the applicant? Councilor Ryan.
Yes, thanks, Madam President. Just real quick, I'm curious because that neighbor asked about the height limits and I didn't hear what they were.
Oh, right now it's 30 feet for the R5 zone and CM1 gets you up to 35.
Nice.
There are bonus opportunities if they provide affordable housing for floor area, but even with those, there is no height increase in the CM1. So 35 would be where it tops out.
Great. Thank you.
Councilor Dunphy.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm a little surprised that the first or third slide or whatever it was says that there's not a planned development for this. This is simply changing the underlying zoning without it. And I'm also looking at the map and recognizing that it's almost a block and a half from the other CM1 zone. First, do we often do a lot of spot zoning like this post comp plan 2035? And second, does something like this anticipate that, I mean, does this set a precedent that we can expect the rest of the Fremont facing blocks between 11th and 12th to eventually also come before us and ask for this upzoning?
Those are really good questions. Whether or not this is spot zoning was really central to this review, and the hearings officer recommendation really felt like it was not. That term isn't really in the code, but that the criteria and the kinds of factors we were weighing were central to kind of that question of whether this is appropriate for that location. It is, we don't get very many comprehensive plan map amendments. We get maybe one a year. And so it is possible that other properties along this corridor could come in, but it's not something that we've really seen before in any, this is a fairly involved review and not something that people undertake lightly. We don't want to necessarily approve a specific development proposal because if that were to change due to any factors going forward, they'd have to come back through the process and get approval for the new proposal. And, 50 years down the line, we really don't want to be referring back to very dated land use approvals when we're just talking about what the zoning regulations are that will apply to the site.
And just so I'm looking between the FAR increase and the height increase and the massing abilities, we're functionally quadrupling the amount of developable land on these two lots. Is that more or less correct?
So I wouldn't, I mentioned that there are bonus potentials for the current base zoning. The current site can have up to 4 units. It can even, if they're going to do deeply affordable units, they can have up to 6 units on the property. And with that, they will get the extra 5 feet of height and they will be allowed more floor area. It is an increase.
Yeah.
It's not, I wouldn't say it's quadrupling.
Well, didn't it say that it was not only increasing FAR, but also going from 40% developable on the lot to 80% developable?
Right. Residential building coverage is determined through a calculation. So it will look different for smaller sites versus larger. For this calculation, the current building coverage allowance is, I calculated 41%, and that would be going up to 85%.
Thank you.
Councillor Smith.
Thank you, Madam President. Have we seen in the past before where people will get the zoning changed? It's easier to get the zoning changed without having a project on it and then come back 6 months to a year later to now ask for permitting for a new project. Have you seen that a pattern in terms of how others have done different zoning requests?
Right, since we're not approving a specific development with this particular case type, they will be limited to what we're granting them in terms of the maximum kind of box they can build to.
Right.
And so that would be, something that these applicants do have a proposal kind of in their back pocket. It's, I don't know what, you know, development stage that is, but.
Right, because I can't just imagine someone's just trying to get zoning just because, just for their health. I mean.
Right, right. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. What I understand is that they would like neighborhood scale commercial use on the right. site, which is not allowed on the under the R5. So they're what they have looked at, which is not what we're reviewing in this case, but what they've looked at is like a ground floor retail use with a couple of residential units above.
Exactly.
Two story.
Because when I looked at this and they said there's no plans, I was like, this is crazy. Nobody's going to do that.
It's the only development type where we're land use review where we're not.
The other thing is they said that they had community input. Did they go to a neighborhood association? When was their community conversation that they had?
So we, through land use reviews, we have a notice requirement. So we're noticing to all properties within 400 feet of the site. Mm-hmm. And we have our public hearing that we're sending out that notice regarding. So anyone can come to that public hearing or submit testimony directly to the hearings office. And that would be recorded and incorporated into the analysis.
So if we're talking about 400 feet, that's probably only... maybe 6 or 8 residents
in each direction.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you for explaining this and bringing this forward today.
Thank you.
Seeing no one else in the queue, thank you for bringing this forward and for the work that our planners have done. And we'd like to invite up the applicant at this time.
Thank you.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Christy White. I'm a land use attorney for the applicant. And I don't have to state my address, it looks like. I want to start by thanking staff and the hearings officer for their work on this project and for the recommendation of approval to the City Council. And as Council President said, this isn't an appeal, it's a review by the City Council of the lower hearings officer's decision to recommend approval. And thanks to the Sabin Neighborhood Association for their support of this amendment. There was reach out to the Neighborhood Association, and as a result of that reach out, we received this nice letter of support. So there was no opposition to this. This is a housing project with a small commercial node. That is the impetus for this zone change and comp plan amendment. The idea is to provide a historic and small commercial node gathering area across from Irving Park, which was historically how this neighborhood gathered. And so bringing that capability back to this vacant corner lot on the ground floor with modest residential development above and beside it is the idea behind this amendment. And to respond to a couple of questions from Councillor Smith and Councillor Dunphy, you don't move forward with a proposal unless you know you have the comprehensive plan map amended and the zone amended, because of course that would be incredibly risky without knowing whether the city was behind this. So the comprehensive plan map designation of mixed use disperse only has two implementing zones. They're CR and CM1. So those were the two zones that were compared throughout the process. And to answer another question about density, the forgotten fact here is the site is really small. So, and the height limit is very modest. So you can't get the kind of FAR within that height limit based on a really small site. FAR being the relationship between the square footage you're allowed to develop and the square footage of the site area. So because we have such a tiny site, doubling that square footage keeps you under basically a two-story building, which is entirely consistent with the surrounding parcels. And like another comparison for you is the existing, there's two legal lots of record. The one that staff showed you, which was a converted commercial storefront and it has a little residential above, that building is already above the FAR that would be allowed in the CR zone, for example. So that's how small scale we're talking. And when you look at the math and run out the FAR numbers, what you find is this building at two stories will likely come in below 30 feet. And 30 feet is the height limitation in the existing R5 zone. So it's once you input the site size into all of those equations, you end up with a pretty small and modest proposal. As we also discussed, the area of Fremont carries other CM1 zoning episodically. And it's not really spot zoning. It's there's an active corner, and there's a reason for having CM1 at this corner. Our corner is vacant. Nearby is two large neighborhood churches. Right across the street, as you saw, was Irving Park. So it's a nice little corner node to bring in some low density commercial operation of some sort with adjacent residential. The site isn't isolated, as we said, and because it's integrated into the fabric of the community, I think the hearings officer found that this would be consistent with the character of the area. The change allows this vacant corner, as you can see, it's been undevelopable, it's a vacant corner across from Irving Park, and transform it with these needed housing units and the commercial node. So I don't feel like I need to say anything more because staff did a very comprehensive job of explaining the fabric and the area and the consistency with the surrounding zoning. So I would thank you for listening to us, request that you also approve the hearing officer's recommendation, and I'm of course here to answer any questions.
Counselors, any questions for Ms. White? Hey, thank you so much for being here today. We will move on to testimony from supporters of the applicant. Keelan, could you call any testifiers up?
Yeah, we have one person signed up in support, Johnny Cortez Galindo. Johnny Cortez Galindo. Doesn't look like they're here. And that completes testimony.
Are there any opponents who have signed up to testify?
No one signed up.
We will move past the rebuttal to the applicant then, or for the applicant then, and move into council discussion. Counselors, does anybody have questions, comments, discussion? Councilor Green.
Thank you, Madam President. I guess my only concern or question would be, would this one-off zoning change preclude any future upzoning in that district? And I guess maybe that's a question for any expert in the room, but or anyone on council.
Lauren, do you want to take that?
So let me make sure I understand. Would this zone change prevent future zone changes from coming in? No, absolutely not. So the way it works is there's a legislative process for zone and comp plan map changes, which is what staff was referring to, kind of happens on the cyclical 20-year plan. And then there's a process in the zoning code for individual property owners to come over in a quasi-judicial and change their zoning. So this would not prevent future property owners from coming in, nor would it require future property owners to come in. It's specific to this site.
Thank you. That does answer my question. And say, I think this is a great use of the flexibilities we have in our zoning code, and I think we should be accommodative to allow someone to fill a little gap that I think the neighborhood needs.
Councilor Clark.
Thank you, Madam President. That's exactly what I was going to say. It's good to see infill. That's exactly what we want. We have vacant lots everywhere that we need to see more housing and small scale commercial develop. So thank you.
I have a quick question, and I'm not sure if it's for staff, perhaps. There is a comment that there had at one point been a question about height, but no follow-up. Through the process of review, did staff hear at all from any of the neighbors who had been notified about their thoughts on this, since we don't have anybody testifying today?
Right. So the individual who came to the hearings officer hearing was the next door neighbor to the east and was basically asking, does this mean that they could build higher next to my property? And, short answer, potentially, because they're going from 30 feet to 35 feet. That would be the extent of it.
And we heard from the applicant that with the FARs, while that is technically allowed by the height zoning, it wouldn't be functionally allowed because of the size of the property. Is that accurate?
Right. I mean, I think the applicant intends to keep the existing kind of historic building in place and develop the vacant portion. Of course, this process wouldn't require that they do that. So, you know, I'm not a developer, so I don't know, you know, could they do three stories and still meet all of the other, you know, things? Would that look wild? Would it function the way we would want them to? I don't know the answer to that. So three stories is the max that you could get. And that would be the same right now if they were to develop up to six units, they get an extra 5 feet of height as well. So potentially, even with the current zoning, they would.
So in terms of impact on neighbors, it allows for commercial as opposed to just residential. It allows for more of the lot to be used. But in terms of height, building type, things like that, there's not a functional change for neighbors in what's allowed.
Depends on if you mean, you know, think 5 feet is functional. I will say that commercial zones require additional setbacks from adjacent properties to try to buffer against those and require buffer landscape buffers. So instead of 5 feet, which is what's currently allowed, the minimum setback from adjacent residential lots goes up to 10 feet with landscaping.
More setback would be required after the change.
Correct.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Councillor Canall.
Just wanted to clarify, sorry.
We're going to keep you up here.
So you mentioned just a second ago that it wouldn't require, and this is, I want to be clear, I'm not suggesting it for this particular project. I'm just trying to understand. You mentioned that it wouldn't require any particular type of development on it. Is that the sort of thing, and maybe this is more of a question for the attorneys, that could be, you mentioned the four types of council actions to take on this, and the second one involved conditions. Is that the sort of thing that would fit into a potential condition on, again, not necessarily this project, just in general?
Yeah, so council does have the ability when doing a comp plan zone map change to condition and specify. I think as Amanda alluded to earlier, though, that tends to create problems down the road. So for example, in recent years, there was a comp plan zone map change for site in Southwest, and the condition that council imposed at the time was to require it to be a grocery store, and that limited and there were some other limitations around that site, and that limited council's ability or the applicant, the property owner's ability to do anything with the site because it was such a specific limitation and didn't really necessarily stand up the test of time. So, I mean, that's a choice, a policy decision council could make with a comprehensive plan zone map change, but there are reasons to kind of keep it consistent with more the zoning. There are other types of conditions council imposes as well related to improvements for things. And we can talk about those as they come up with specific applications, but it's within the scope of your authority, yes.
Okay, and then sort of to clarify the previous question, does this change require any of the use to be residential? Or does that remain entirely within the permitting process and the property owner's authority?
Correct. We would we'd just be going by what the CM1 zone allows. Certainly residential is an allowed use for all commercial zones.
Allowed but not required under. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Councillor, do you have follow-up there where we should have time for you to put forward a condition? Okay. Is there any other discussion? Okay. Given that we haven't had any testimony today and we haven't received any requests to leave the record open, I am going to close the evidentiary record. And councillors, you'll remember that land use items are a two meeting hearing. So at this point, we are looking for a motion. We can move to tentatively approve the application. We can move to tentatively approve it with conditions, or we could move to tentatively deny the application. There's a longer motion when we decide which we want to use that I can help us read into the record. And then we'll vote on that and then come back at a time certain for a final vote.
Point of order. Can I use that? But are you saying because there's two meetings, right? If we do something like a tentative approval or a tentative denial, what does that mean for the second meeting?
That gives time for staff to prepare the official documents. And then at the second meeting, we vote on those official documents, which unless we are asking for approval with conditions, will look just like what we have today, but in formal form. And then we will vote on those.
Yeah, and sorry, just to further, because this particular item is an ordinance, so typically for land use, it would be a council order, and the council president's correct. It would come back for a second reading and it would be a final. Because it's an ordinance, because it's a map change, which has to be done by ordinance, the code actually requires, unless there's an emergency, that amendment would happen, and then there would be one more reading. So there's actually two more readings. Both of those would be short, 5-minute roll call items, but the purpose of that is today council would take a tentative vote, give direction to staff and the applicant to come back with findings reflecting how this application meets the applicable approval criteria. We return for this next reading, which we've been coordinating dates over here. That would be a quick item, and then one more reading for a final vote, unless council decides to add an emergency clause, and then it can be done at the second meeting.
So if we give a tentative approval or denial, then that needs to come, like, it requires a motion to say tentative approval, right? But does that require that the motioner also say why, or say I need these things, or is there's some certain set of things we're already going to get, but is this a place for us to request other materials in between the hearings?
Request other materials to review for the purposes of making your decision or for what you had hoped to see in the findings?
I guess both. I'm just asking a larger process.
So typically the tentative vote gives direction for staff to make sure that the findings reflect council's decision and the things that we heard today. I recognize that there was not a lot heard today, but because the hearings officer's recommendation, we just want to make sure it fully reflects and it complies with all of the applicable approval criteria. So that's what staff and the applicant and our office will return with. If there are things that were salient that council wants to make sure are included in the findings, we would want to definitely hear that, that feedback, but it is not necessary for council to supplement it. And then if what you're asking for is more information because your vote could potentially change between the tentative and the subsequent, my recommendation would be to not make a vote today if that was your inclination, only because once you make a tentative vote, it's sort of sending staff and the applicant off to do a whole lot of work. And should council, they come back and then council says, actually, I want to change my vote, we need to then go do a whole lot of work again and come back. So I hope that answers your question. Yeah.
Councilor Green.
I move that we provide a tentative approval for the staff recommendation.
Second.
And just to clarify, the hearings officer's recommendation?
That is right.
Okay.
Does that suffice for what you need for a motion?
Yes. I'll restate it for the purposes of the record. So the evidentiary record is closed for and no more oral and written testimony. And council motion is to approve uphold the hearing officer's recommendation and tentatively approve and request that staff return. And I think the date that we settled on was March 19th at 6 p.m. with revised findings for council to amend the ordinance to reflect those revised findings.
I believe we have a second to that.
Yeah, I still second that. Yeah.
Councilor Green, are you in the queue for discussion? Councilor Canal?
So my question's about the date you just mentioned. Is it possible to not have this be at a evening meeting?
I was discussing this with the council clerk. The alternative would be to have it on a Thursday. It's because it's a roll call item. It would be reconvening you on that Thursday meeting to just make a 5-minute vote as opposed to having it during the evening meeting and have it be, so it's either lengthening the evening meeting or having a meeting for the sole purpose of just calling a vote and then leaving again.
I think you may want to speak on this, Council.
5 minutes. Well, a quick question. We have closed the evidentiary record, but this is an ordinance which we usually accept public testimony on. Will we be accepting public testimony at that meeting or not?
No, the record would be closed. There'd be no testimony. No.
Okay, and the amendment would not significantly lengthen that 5 minutes?
What's that?
My understanding is we would need to amend in the things that we've been discussing. That would not significantly increase the length of the
No, it would just be, so the vote on the 19th would be, I move to amend the ordinance to include staff's findings, and it would all be written up, and then it would just should just be a quick call your names roll call vote
on the amendment, and then at the
and then one more final vote, and again April could be
or whatever.
Yeah, just okay. Speeches should you choose to make them, otherwise a quick roll call vote.
Thank you.
Councilors, any other discussion? Keelan, could you please call the roll?
Avalos?
Aye.
Dunphy?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Canal?
Aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Oyama Lane?
Aye.
Murillo?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Green?
Aye.
Turtle Guinea?
Aye.
The finding, or it's tentatively approved with a vote of 11 ayes.
Thank you.
So we'll return March 19th at 6 p.m. and I'll coordinate with staff and the applicant to get the findings prepared.
We may want to say 6.05 p.m. I believe our meeting formally starts at 6 p.m.
Right. Is the time certain? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. 6.05.
6.05. Okay.
Thank you. Lauren, do you have anything else you need from us on this agenda item?
I do not.
Okay. We will reconsider this on our March 19th agenda.
Council President, I'm so sorry. That was completely my mistake. We would actually want to set the time certain for 6:15 because we'll hear public communications first for the first 15 minutes. So
perfect.
I'm sorry, 6:15.
We will hear this agenda item again on March 19th at 6:15 p.m. And with that, we will close the council meeting. Thank you all so much for being here.